Hey Chris, great to meet you today. How are you doing?
Good, good. Good to meet you as well.
We saw the other day and like we were talking about your background and how you ended up at SUP that you founded with Don Hoffman. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say I've known Dom for a very long time, and kind of at the start of COVID, we were all kind of looking for something to do. And I come from kind of game development. And in New York, we were kind of like locked in our houses, a lot of sirens going off, and not much that we were really allowed to do. And so I started a game development community in Discord with a few other people. Brain Drain, who's also a Blitmap artist, was a like kind of key part of that. And what we would do is every night we would get together on a call and we would make games, or we would play games, or we would just kind of talk, shop with each other and all that kind of stuff. And it kind of grew little by little by little because it was just a cool community. We were all getting better at making video games, even though it was also our day job. But it was also just like about camaraderie through a kind of hard time. At the same time, Dom and I were in another Discord where we were kind of just playing games, all sorts of stuff, trying out things that we hadn't tried in a while, like EverQuest and Vanilla WoW, I think we did one night. Did some weird, obscure, like Dungeons and Dragons modules. I invited him in to, it's called Comship, that's the name of the community. Yeah, he just started making games. And nobody really knew who each other were because it was like anonymous Discord, weird titles and stuff. So as we got closer to kind of, Blitmap beginning, Dom was kind of just really in tune with what was going on in the space. And he's like, I think something's about to happen here. I think that plus the fact that he's just, always kind of constantly curious. He was started to like, really dig in there. And he had been in the space for a while, just I think specifically he saw this thing about this convergence coming up. Starting to work on Blitmap. And I think at first, like, he rolled it out to the Comship community, and we were all like, well, like, not quite sure. A lot of them were like, don't know what crypto is, weren't really messing around with it, but could do pixel art or could, understand at least that component. And I think they just started making stuff and were super excited about it. And I think that was really cool. Like, it just kind of clicked really quickly, like how easy it was to create and share stuff. And then we did that, and then a lot of things happened, and now we're here today. But I mean, like, there was also this other element of just like kind of, I don't know, this convergence of basically just a lot of really talented people, all with completely different skill sets.
And being able to put like those pixel art on chain was
Yeah,
kind of like a
exactly.
really
Yeah.
interesting aspect of it.
Yeah, like, I mean, you've met now a few of the other artists, and you can, like, we're all really different, so I think it's kind of cool, Yeah.
And so like it wasn't planned to kind of like create SUP that came like afterwards.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, so I think the way we were thinking about it is when a lot of our kind of efforts, and we're kind of building stuff constantly, and I have a day job and we're all doing this kind of stuff, I think it started to become clear that like having an organization to kind of develop things as a full-time job made sense. There's just so much to build and there's so much to do. And I think in making that decision, we also knew that there's this community that we're a part of that has incredibly high conviction for the stuff we do, and that is our most valuable asset. So, it kind of just made sense at the time. It really is a full-time job and a half to like kind of do all the things we're doing. And for me, there was no way to do it without it being my full-time gig, essentially.
Yeah, like the space also evolves so fast that if you're not like fully focused on it,
Yeah. I think the way I think about it is like in free-to-play games, you know, back in, you know, when they first launched and started to become really popular on Facebook, we were seeing like a new game, you know, every week or so, or maybe month, but they were kind of just changing things by degrees. And then, you know, you look back 6 months and you go, oh, wow, the trends have really changed like a lot. And then in AAA game development, you know, it's like every time, you know, a new Zelda comes out, which is like every 10 years, or a new Skyrim, which is every 10 years, you know, games change a bit. But in crypto, it was like every week, because basically it was like, hey, there's this toolbox that can do all this stuff, and you're getting, for the first time, not just one type of programmer using it in a very specific way, because that's where like the money's coming from. Like, oh, all the money's coming from marketing. Yeah, let's make marketing tools with this tech or whatever. No, it was like coming from all these different directions. And then you had a huge amount of value on the culture around artists being able to control their works and own their works and actually make, for the first time, like a reasonable wage on, you know, after struggling for so long and doing contract work. And so I don't think I've ever really seen that with technology. Like, you know, if you look at like kind of artistic, you know, developments with technology and stuff like that, a lot of these things require massive teams just to use and realize. They'll have a visionary director, you know, driving it. No, it's like, hey, like I'm going to be in, you know, the kind of hanging out with my friend, you and me, well, you'll do the tech and I'll do the art, or, you know, I'll do the tech and the art, or, you know, this artist has been doing these amazing pieces for so long, let's get them into, you know, NFT space. And, you know, there's one thing about like, oh, the work itself is like amazing. But then there's this other thing about like, oh, is there a cool technical way we can mess with this, you know? And there's still so much room to like mess around with things. Like, you know, composability in general is just like untouched in a lot of ways, which is really cool. I'm excited, yeah.
And Bleepmap was one of the very first after nouns to tap into Creative Commons Zero, which is another very interesting tool in a way.
Yeah, yeah. I think, I could talk about that a little. Like, I think, you know, the classic example that Dom talks about is, you know, King Arthur, Green Knight, you know, this is a derivative of that. And I think kind of like there's a lot of ways to think about it. One of them is to say, like, I think CC0 as a culture has more unique users than any NFT collection that exists, right? So you're like, all right, like, I'm going to make something for just one community. Okay, that's pretty limited. But, like, I'm going to make something that really tries to compose as much as possible. So, like, Hyperloot, things like that. But also just in the fact that people in that, you know, sector are kind of like really are in that, you know, area are really interested in all things CC0, and they're almost maximalist in the way. There are issues with it, though, where, like, you know, how derivative works make money, if you're royalty driven, exactly, you know, where does that model work there, you know, attribution, IP protection, all that stuff. And I think there's like obviously pros and cons to every model. But for me, it's like, I've never been able to just make stuff and not worry about it, you know? And that's like a first ever, you know? Usually we would use, in video games, we'd use public works or CC0 or Creative Commons stuff as placeholder, you know, when we're developing. And very, very rarely did you see a lot of like, you know, creative work, Creative Commons stuff like front and center in a game. I mean, a good example of that one might be like Peggle uses Ode to Joy, right? And that I believe is a Creative Commons like available thing. But that's not frequent, you know? So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of space there, and it's nice that like, instead of waiting for licenses to expire and using things from the 1920s, it's like, hey, actually, like, there's a financial logic and kind of engine here that allows us to release like current works and things that are, you know, appealing now, which makes them probably way easier to use. I mean, some of the stuff we're producing is, I mean, all the stuff we're producing is of a quality tier that like you would expect from a AAA development studio. So, you know, if we release an audio track at that quality, and it's current and you can use that, like, that's amazing. You know, if we were just producing like lower quality stuff and like whatever, okay, so maybe it's not as encouraging, but I mean, a lot of us are making, including now, it's like really high fidelity things that, you know, are exciting.
And also because I feel like the funding models for creative companies change a bit because of NFTs. Like suddenly you can, by releasing a collection, if it's successful, raise like a lot of money also because the space is still relatively small, but then you have those funds that can help you continue the work and expand on the IP as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the one mismatch a little bit right now is building takes a lot of time. But also, you know, releasing early is cool, and you have kind of a lot of these communities give unconditional support to, you know, the development being done. So it is a positive, you know, thing. But there, I think, are some cases where the things people want to build are maybe bigger than they understand right now. And I think we're still in a phase of, like, if your roadmap doesn't have you launching for another, like, 3 years, probably not the right product for this space. If you're not able to really, like, engage with your community for even, like, 2 years, probably not the right product for the, you know what I mean? So there's certain things that, even though you have the money to make, like, a AAA game, you know, some of these groups have, you know, $1 billion, right? It may not be the thing your community wants. And then you also think about, like, well, okay, so if you're not CC0 and people are getting, like, licensing kickbacks, right, like royalties off of the works being created, do they really want you to make a game, which is a fairly risky endeavor, especially if you don't have experience in the area, also a very costly endeavor, or do they want you to maximize, you know, your kind of merchandising, because that has great margins, but maybe not the most, you know, interactive content and things like that.
And compared to the video game industry and like the pre-Web3 kind of like culture and arts industry, like, do you feel more connected to the audience and to the holders? Like, do you
feel there's like a, yeah, definitely
a closer. People are closer to the project.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, you know, you'd launch a game and you'd sell 10 million copies or something like that and a bunch of downloads. And, you know, you have this, like, almost, like, unfathomable amount of users. But the way that you process who your community is was, like, you go to Reddit and you're like, well, you watch your reviews and you're like, okay, so we have this, like, Metacritic score of, like, this many things. And then you go to Reddit and you're like, there are like 50 really loud people in this forum, but that's our community.
Yeah.
And then you see a lot of games where they make stuff basically based on those like 50 or maybe even 500 people's opinions. And then the sequel doesn't do that well. And it's because it turns out they're just the loudest voice in the room. And it's actually a super toxic relationship with them. Whereas, you know, I start almost every day engaging with our community in some way or another. I mean, lately it's been less so just because we're doing hiring and I'm focused on all the things we have in production and things like that. But like, I mean, I'm sitting here now talking to you, right? Like, I don't think that's something that is culturally what is happening in the game space ever, you know? There's not that level of access. I mean, as an example, right? Like, I love games, and I wrote, when I was growing up, I wrote every creator that I, you know, adored a letter, and I was like, hey, I really like your stuff, and I, like, took the time to do that, and I read all their books, or they read everything they did, or I played every game, and a few of them did get back to me, but, like, the idea that I would ever meet them, or that they ever want to meet me, no, like, there's not, you know, and I think, you know, without naming other projects, you know, out loud or whatever, I think you're seeing lot of it is that, you know, Dom has just a knack for understanding and prioritizing fairness to the community. And so, you know, CC0 was a kind of community decision to some extent, or within the artist group. You know, a lot of the decisions we made were community-based, and we're gauging the vote for Logos drop and all that type of stuff. And it's like, there's this fear with DAOs that, like, oh, we're going to get manipulated and things like that. And that does absolutely happen. And I think the way that Nouns did their, like, veto 6-month window, like, totally smart, makes a total amount of sense. But I think they're probably in a stasis mode right now where they're not, like, having to, like, constantly fend off weird weird attacks of, like, you know, ruining their entire everything. And I think that's kind of the belief with, like, oh, if you get the community involved, they're going to, like, opt for some decision that basically doesn't net out well for the creators, right? Like, they're going to, I mean, and you do see that. Like, there were some collections where they released a token really early and there was, like, a vote to do a second drop. And that vote, a lot of the times, would just fail because it would mess with scarcity. No, we don't want more users. We want this to be a 10,000 PFP collection, and we don't want to mess with floor price. Even if it's a temporary hit, we don't want more surplus. And it's at odds with, like, well, don't we want more people to be aware of this brand? Like, this brand has no legs unless more people are aware of it. And so there are weird situations like that. But the way that we've, I think, the way our community has taught us things, the way that we've kind of listened to them, the way that we've, like, you know, kind of interacted with them and spend time really being as thoughtful as possible. Like, if I go into the chat, I'm like, damn, am I really listening to this person? Am I actually hearing what they're saying? I don't go in there to placate them. I go in there because I, like, really want them to feel, well, A, I really want to understand them, and I also want them to feel understood, and that takes time, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's, you know, there's just a kind of interesting thing about that, for sure.
Yeah, one thing I love also about a Bleatmap and, like, the Discord is, like, seeing people, like, nifty pins, just, like, suddenly, like, creating a newsletter, creating, like, you know, stickers and
the
pins
best.
Because it's, like, CC0, like, all those kind of, like, community-launched little, like, projects.
Yeah.
Are something that existed in the video game industry with, like, mods or, like, people kind of, like, spinning off their own forums or things like that. But
yeah.
I feel like there is way more connection between users and players and the studio itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, as an example for... Sorry, I keep saying as an example as a preface, but I mean, like, I think... So I go in these flows where I just say the same thing over and over again, but forgive me. But no, I mean, Nifty's kind of interesting because Nifty, you're like, well, what is, I consider him very much like part of the Bleatmap team in a lot of ways. Like, and you kind of think about, like, well, what is, like, someone who is part of the community? What is a fan? What is a whatever? And, you know, you think about, like, a fan, and it's a very one-directional relationship. Like, they're a fan of yours, and okay, cool, great. But if you're like, hey, like, I am relying on you for this thing because you are doing it so well, or because you're just, like, bringing so much value here, that's not a fan, really. That's, like, someone that's, like, I'm now kind of dependent on that, you know, in a way, in a very different way than a fan, right? And I think... like, that's really important to me because nobody really knows what they're doing in this space. We're all trying to do our best. So why should any of us feel like we can be, like, the gatekeeper to this is how it's done. This is expectations. It's actually, like, a hierarchical kind of relationship. Like, we don't know. We're trying our best. Like, my skill is... you know, making content, managing team, game design, things like that, right? But, like, I have a lot of areas where I do not have nearly the ability that some of the people in that Discord have. And when they come up and they do stuff, it's, like, awesome. Like, that's the sum of the parts, you know. And as holders, like, you know, as the brand goes up, like, there is a benefit there, right? Value goes up, things like that. But I mean, generally, it's just a really nourishing kind of feeling where you know, you're not like a number, you're not like a tool to be used where it's like our holders can really pump stuff. Like, it's not like, no, I mean, we're just like waking up and feeling like we're being listened to, and, you know, we're having interesting conversations. We're all respectful of each other. It's an incredibly safe Discord comparatively.
It's funny also how kind of like Discord, which was used a lot by players and in the video game industry, became this de facto platform for Web3 products.
It's really strange. I think maybe a part of it has to do with, like, back in the day, like, you would have the person that set up a Discord back in the day was a very specific person, which was like, the person's like, I don't like the audio quality of this game. Like, yeah. I'm going to make this server. And it's like that friend of yours that's always doing all these like support things to make everybody else's experience better. But it wasn't like the most like user-friendly thing or whatever. And then so you're getting all these people that are like, yeah, okay, I'm into that. And there's also a younger generation in there now that are using it for voice chat, especially over COVID, because it's really seamless. You're just like popping into a pre-existing room, which is almost like a physical space in a way. Like Clubhouse kind of had that vibe going on. But I mean, I think, Discord. I mean, Discord is probably one of the major components in the existing metaverse in terms of it is a space where we talk and we are social. And we have, you know, four windows open, which is like Twitter, Discord, maybe a game, and, you know, whatever else you want to have. But like those, it's definitely a component there.
Speaking of that, like this word, the metaverse, is kind of like overused and
yeah, it doesn't
super
really
overused. Mean anything yeah, in yeah, way. But yeah. Like, how do you see the space going away from like this play to earn grinding that we've seen a bit with Axie Infinity
to
something more? There's been a lot of critics in the, especially gamers, that kind of like see this as a, they see the more like speculative monetary aspect of things.
Yeah.
And how do you think you can kind of like overcome this and still integrate NFTs and Web3 in games, but kind of like diversify a bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to like player volition and what fantasies you're trying to satisfy. And play to earn is using behavioral economics to motivate people extrinsically. So it's like, there's nothing like in your fiber that's like, this is fun, this is amazing in these games. There's these like extrinsic motivators that are manipulating you, which is, you know, like, you know, loss aversion or any of these other kind of principles in that space that, you know, you would see with like a Farmville game, essentially. And I think people are rediscovering those in this space. And being like, hey, look at all these new designs. It's like, no, like those existed, right? Like, oh, I have to pet my pet every day or I lose and blah, 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 blah. But really, if it all boils down to like, it's just high engagement yield farming.
Yeah.
Right? Like if a low engagement yield farming is I put it in a bank and I get an interest rate or whatever, like cool. But like if high engagement yield is like, I have to touch this thing every day, it's the same thing as it's just a bank, right?
It's a job almost.
Yeah, it's a job. And so that's like, that's heavy extrinsic motivators, which work, right? It's how you know most of these games in the mobile and casual free-to-play space made all their money, right? Okay, cool. But I think that the intrinsic experiences, things that are fundamentally fun to do with friends, are like infinitely more valuable and infinitely more scalable, right? Yeah. Like where, you know, I mean, this is probably a terrible example, but like, you know, everyone plays Mario Kart, right? Switch has to be like, Nintendo has to be a little bit better about it, but like, I'm sure the conversion to buying their DLC is super high for fans of that. Like, you know, they maybe don't have the most offerings, but they're getting like pretty good sell through on anything that they offer, right? And maybe you don't make, you know, as much money in the short term, but in the long term, you have a brand that has really, really high integrity. And that's how you have to kind of play it, right? I think we're trying to think about a company that, you know, kind of exists for as long as humanly possible. So, you know, tweaking, hey, did we show this person this screen to buy stuff too late or too early? Did we give them enough? Like, that's not really fun. I don't want my life to be positioning. And I know, you know, I know how to do that stuff. But the extra weird thing about it was that culturally in the games industry, those types of designs became known as dark design practices, which basically is like the dark arts. And you can look it up. There's like, type in dark design practices. It's a list of all of them. And you're like, hey, that's in all of these games. And basically in the industry, it's like, don't do that. And if you do it, people call you out because there's that culture. But what's happening now is that I wouldn't say, people might say that we have the 28-year-old, the 34-year-old, whatever demographic in space or whatever we used to think was, you know, core gamers or whatever. But the people playing Axie Infinity are not necessarily the same people that played video games before. And so some of these things are kind of new to them, where they're like, oh my God, that's really, you know, what's going on there, you know? And I think just one more note on that is like, a lot of people like interpret all this shit like hyper literally. And like, they don't really think about like what the fantasy is of that space. So like, you know, Ready Player One, things like that. People are like, oh, the fantasy is I could have my Gundam and I could have my Power Ranger and I can have all that stuff together, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I don't think that's really the fantasy. I think the fantasy is it's about exploring a new frontier. It's about uncovering the unknown. It's about making new friends. It's about being able to tell a story about something that you encountered and what happened to you, right? And the fact that you have, you know, Mace Windu's lightsaber the whole time, super sick, awesome. But it's the that's a secondary aspect of it. It's about being a traveler, you know, or finding a role or finding value for yourself in that world, right? Or in those worlds, you know? Like, I could see a version of, you know, one of these things that takes Ready Player One hyper literally. And, you know, you read about, like, Neal Stephenson or William Gibson, and all of them are just like, yo, people really took our stuff too literally. They shouldn't have done that. You read all this stuff, and you're kind of like, I could see a version of a game coming out that's like Ready Player One that does all these great licensing deals, and you're like, oh, cool, I get to be a Gundam, and blah, 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 blah. And I get to play Fortnite as a Gundam. And you're like, all right, well, that's cool. That's definitely, like, interesting. But like,
which one is more fun also?
Right. Like, but it's just that, right?
Yeah.
And versus like, yo, last night I went to this planet and I know we've all been there before and whatever, but I found a secret room there. If you guys seen that, know what you're talking about, you know? Well, anyway, I got this quest and it relates to that thing that we all like heard about, that secret kind of weapon or whatever. And it's like a quest for like four players. But it's in that world that's like a top-down shooter, and I don't know if you guys are good at that or not, but we should give it a shot. We only have like one shot to do it. Or something crazy like that, and you're like, oh, wow. Or just like if there was like a library full of text and people that really like looking through books in the digital multiverse to find clues, to figure things out. Like, they do that, and they realize that no one's ever done that before. No one's really, you know, you can have different archetypes, you know. This is for the people that like organizing things. This is the people that like first-person shooters. This is for, and you give them the space to kind of interact. And then ideally, all those experiences are made by completely different people so that it doesn't feel homogenous, you know. So it doesn't feel like you're in some, like, corpo emoji face world. You're in something that maybe feels a little bit not entirely in control, like gritty almost, like less manicured. Safe, right? Obviously safe, but like, you know, it's not all on rails, if that makes sense, you know?
And I guess the composability aspect of things make it possible to kind of like link different
Yeah, composability is like for me, that's like the design space. Like scarcity is cool, and decentralization is cool, and they're super cool. Like I'm just saying it really relaxed. They're all cool. Like they're all amazing. But composability is the one where you're like, there's no better feeling than like making something and then seeing somebody's interpretation of the thing you made, and you're being like, whoa, I didn't even know that, you know, I didn't even think that that was how someone would interpret that, or they use it in that way. Or just the fact that like, if a company goes under, you can compose their assets and support their users, you know?
Even if it's just like the scores and the achievements, if it, even if it's not like 3D models.
Yeah, it's also, it's like, you know, like yeah, exactly. It, like right now I lost my old gamer score on Xbox because I switched accounts a long time ago. I forget, like maybe I switched my Xbox or my credit card. I don't know what happened, but I stopped having that account. I lost that gamer score. I lost all my achievements. I don't care that much. But my brother was like, oh, let me see your gamer score. He's like, why is it so low? And I'm like, damn it, man. Like I lost, and he likes to like look through all the achievements. And he's like, you haven't done anything. I'm like, that's not true. I was playing for so long. But even beyond that, it's more like when sometimes when games go down, that's a lot of those people in the community, that's kind of like, that was their community.
Yeah.
It's the same as like a store or a restaurant closing that was community, you know, kind of important to the community, you know?
Like, yeah, and all, that's, all the identity that you have in a video game, like if you're playing as a mage in World of Warcraft, and like people know you as this kind of character, and suddenly if the game servers, like the studio stops or whatever, and then you lose this identity that you have.
Yeah, yeah.
As well.
And everyone's off to the wind, you know? And then you and your friends try to make a server that, you know, houses that old game, and then gets sued by the company. And it's like, it's like, what the hell is going on here? You know? So yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff like that I just don't think makes a lot of sense. Like I get protecting your IP, right? I understand that. But like, does it really matter that there was a World of Warcraft vanilla server run by like a weird group of people that, like, that was their pride and joy. They did a great job with it. The current game was like becoming something that a lot of people didn't like. And instead they like, you know, they're like, we're actually going to do that ourselves and we're going to sue you for that. It's kind of just, it makes no sense to me.
Yeah, it's like suing people that bought your game and like fans.
Yeah.
It's suing fans.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think if the number one brand in the world was CC0, it would be, it feels like a way, like it'd be like a way better world, just because you'd be like, oh wow, I like love these characters so much, and I want to express that because I want to, you know, make products for people that care about them as much.
Yeah, and even if you're not CC0, people are going, if you like become popular, people are going to sell t-shirts. People are going to...
Yeah, exactly.
You see like fake sunglasses being sold.
Well, there's
everywhere.
The whole like... Yeah, there's the whole bootleg market and stuff. And yeah, it's basically the same. You know, it's... I think back to like Disney's relationship in other countries that were like bootlegging stuff of theirs. And like they had this whole thing where they were doing like exclusive licensing and distribution rights in those countries that was like super lucrative. And then they started to have a presence there and, you know, whatever, and controlling it. But for the longest time, a lot of those brands were getting so much copyright infringement that it'd be hard to say that they weren't public domain just by the sheer amount of, like, stuff that was being produced, even though it was legal. I mean, another really good example is, like, CD Projekt Red. I'm going to butcher this, but basically the way that they got started, from how I kind of remember, is... I think it was the Czech Republic. There was a lot of bootlegging of games, constant. And you would launch a game over there. Nobody would ever use it. Like, no one ever buy it. They just bootleg it. So CD Projekt Red started to, I think they went, maybe they're called CD Projekt or CD Red, I don't know, something before that. They were named something slightly different. And they started to translate games into, I think it was Czech, if I'm not mistaken, and then bundle those games with like cloth maps and audiobooks and all these things and package them in this nice collector's edition box. And as a customer, you're like, okay, I could bootleg it and not understand any of the words in this game. Or I could like bootleg the version that they made that has the voices, whatever. Or I could just like give them money because they're doing this awesome thing and I'm going to get a free map that's physical and all this stuff. And all of a sudden, they became, everyone started buying from them because they were adding that extra layer of, you know, care and attention and stuff like that. So like, they started to operate in a region that was effectively public domain just by adding a this added layer of presentation, added layer of care, in a market that wasn't really responding to licenses at all. And I think the only reason why I bring that up is it's kind of interesting in the CC0 space where you see things like Slender Man or other IP that comes out where fidelity and quality are important in the CC0 space and allow you to become like kind of stand out and actually make revenue because people want to support that. You know, if you have a brand that's CC0 and 100 million people like it, and you make products for that brand, you're making products that are appealing to 100 million people, you know, however many people there are. So it's like, it's kind of just, I think, a law of numbers. And right now we're really early where we don't have that scale or that exposure. But, you know, as you grow, you have a bigger market to make things for, you know.
And what do you think are like the things like today that prevent growth? Like, is there any like, kind of like pain points that you see in the web?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot. One is, I think we believe that people have to understand crypto to be in the crypto space. Two, I think we think that they have to understand everything from, you know, their, you know, what their, what a gas fee is, to what Gwei is, to what their exact, you know, ideas and everything, and they, you know, their seed phrase, and it's like, hey, get, by the way, like, most people don't have a password manager or don't even really even remember their password, and you're at, and like, when they buy a new Windows computer and Microsoft asks them to, you know, type in a new Windows email, they like lose it, and you're asking them to do all these things. And on top of that, like the average cost to them is like probably like upwards of $100 on lost transactions or, you know, whatever. I think there's that, there's the like logic barrier, UX barrier. There's the stigma to it. There is the feeling of being very late to it and maybe it's too late. There's the lack of literacy amongst users where they can barely explain what it is to other people, so they can't even really advocate. Like literacy about the space, even by people within the space, is pretty low. And I think there's very little tech that illustrates any of its principles, right? We could see scarcity, but I mean, like, if you ever try to explain that to somebody, they're like, decentralization is really hard to explain sometimes because you actually have to, like, for some people, they only really get it once they're part of like a DAO voting and they're like, oh, I kind of understand, you know? Or that they look on the blockchain, they're like, oh, I can see everything. I kind of like understand how that means decentralization. Like Loot kind of explains composability for NFTs pretty well. But like, it's still really hard to get people to have it click. And then there's also the fact that people have an insane amount of loyalty to companies that have treated them terribly. Like, you know, any of these major video game companies that, you know, have done everything from, you know, every year they have to have a new save file or character or rebuy everything or every, you know, they, you know, close their accounts or clear their characters or whatever. And then, and you know, when it's like, hey, do you want to engage in this NFT thing? And they're just like, no, I don't really want to do that. And then I think another bigger barrier is just bad players in the space, making it really hard to trust anyone, and also wrap your head around it. It's like, if everyone thinks that all NFT gaming is play to earn, like, pass, I'm not really going to engage in that. If also all they hear is all their friends are, you know, losing money and having to sell their house because they timed the market badly or whatever. And so I think, you know, broader appeal has to be, you know, I think quality really matters. And I think, unfortunately, like, we've had a lot of, like, I think false positives where people are like, look how bad this NFT looks, or look how bad this art is, and they're doing amazingly. Mm-hmm. Art doesn't matter. And I'm just like, yeah, maybe not right now and maybe not in this market, but also there's not a lot of quality in general. And then it's like, but like 10 years from now, what do you think the answer to that question is going to be? You know, like, are people really going to be like 10 years from now, wow, look at how awesome that is? No, because it's really easy to make bad stuff. So if you just imagine it's going to be super saturated with just, you know, low level, low brow stuff, people really going to matter about that, care about the thing 10 years from now? No. Like, so just do good work now, pay off down the line, that brand will be recognized, hopefully, if you find the right area and find the right exposure.
Yeah, building for the long term and kind of like ignoring the,
yeah,
the low attention span in the,
yeah,
in the speculation in the space.
I think the last thing I would just say is that, like, permission kind of goes both ways, where you're seeing a lot of older brands try to get permission to be in the Web3 space by doing collaborations. And you're getting a lot of Web3 companies trying to get permission to be in the traditional space by doing collaborations. And it's just kind of strange because, like, we've only really had this run for a pretty short period of time. Even if you consider, like, the length of, you know, let's say from 2013 to 2010, like, that's still an incredibly short period of time. But, like, let's just say last year really took off. To already have everyone being like, as a brand, we're doing collabs, we're doing blah, blah, blah. You're kind of just like looking at it and you're like, oh, you guys are just literally jumping to like the last play in Supreme's book, but you're ignoring how long it took them to get to that play. And it's like, now nobody knows what your brand is. They think it's just collabs. And it's just a little strange, I think. I don't know, a lot of different things.
Not a lot of people kind of like have this long-term vision, I feel, for now, and it's, but a lot of, I will say a lot of, there's a lot of good examples coming up, and hopefully when this scales to like much bigger size, it will kind of like wash away some of the bad
actors. Or just change their thinking, like, you know, I mean, they hopefully we do things that change people's minds a bit, you know, or they like cause them to be introspective. They don't have to leave. They just maybe change the way that they're, you know, interacting with stuff. I think that there are some people that came into Blipmap, our Discord, maybe with some odd tendencies, and then being here, you know, hopefully they were like, wow, everyone's talking to each other in a different way, mm-hmm. you know?
It's been a year now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It's been
exciting. Still, a lot of people just hang out.
Yeah.
The same,
it's nice. It's a family kind of vibe, but...
Yeah. Thanks a lot for...
Yeah, no problem.
...sharing all that with me.
Sorry today. For rambling.
No, it's cool. Looking forward for what's next also.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Cool. Awesome.